All right, and welcome to another episode of Autodesk Digital Builder Podcast. I am your host, Eric Thomas. I am sitting here with Jit Kee Chin, the Executive Vice President and Chief Data Officer at Suffolk Construction, and we are live at Autodesk University. How are you feeling today? It's late in the day. I'm sure you've walked about 10 miles at this point.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. But it's been a spectacular day. Kicked off really well. Great sessions all day, and I'm delighted to be here, Eric.
It's fun. It's been 3 years. I can't believe it's been so long since we've had a chance to connect at AU, and just the energy in the room, even at 7:30 p.m. today, is still quite high. Everybody's checking out the booths. We're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it? But what was great, apart from meeting everybody you haven't met for 3 years, is frankly, no one's been still, have they? If everybody's been making progress, everybody's been building jobs, and it's amazing to actually come back after 3 years and see where everyone's at.
Yeah, well, we've had such a forced pivot, unfortunately. Like, there's a lot of bad tied to the last couple of years. But if you step back from that, look at those silver linings. Like, we have had an acceleration in our construction technology, the way we're consuming data. And if you're trying to find that silver lining, I think that's really where we're going to be able to focus. That's good.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what else has accelerated. Digital adoption has accelerated, particularly anything to do with remote collaboration. So I think, you know, silver linings.
Yeah. And that's such an interesting nuance for me, too, because construction used to be an industry, and it still is to a degree, where butts in seats was really how you qualified productivity. And that is not the case anymore, especially for more progressive contractors. And it's also an avenue that you can use to start looking at things like labor shortages, where all your staff doesn't have to live where your project's being built, especially if they're in the back end managing technology and data and things along those lines. So it's ripe for opportunity, and it also helps a lot of the builders attract different talent they might not have had access to before.
You know, that's a fine line that we contractors have to walk. You know, at the end of the day, we're building buildings. I mean, not on site. Sometimes there are things that you don't see. You need to be there to lead. You need to be there to inspire the people, organize the work, what have you, right? But you're right. Not everything has to be, bums and seats anymore. And I think it's all about being thoughtful about when do you need to be.
Yep.
And when can you give the workforce the flexibility to do what they need to do as well. And that's why I think we've seen such takeoff in remote collaboration tools, a takeoff in consuming digital information from wherever you are. And frankly, that's just all bringing consumer-grade stuff into the workplace for our people.
And you make such a good point there too, because like my journey in the last few years has been a bit different because obviously Autodesk is a technology company. I've been in the office, I think, 6 times in 2.5, 3 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, there's just not really been much of a reason. And now we're refocusing into more of a collaborative reason for coming into the office. So when it makes sense to bring people in, we do. And when we don't, we empower people to work from where they want to do it. And it's had a lot of benefit for the organization. And aside from the journey of technology companies and the ether of the last few years, I do want to talk a little bit about your background. And I understand you have a bit of a non-traditional entry point into construction. And I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about that.
Certainly. Yeah. So I like to say I'm not from this industry, even though I've been in this industry over 5 years now. But I'm very humbled when I came in because I realize it's not just individuals that have spent their entire careers in this industry, but entire generations of their family has spent their entire careers in this industry. So by that yardstick, I will forever be a newcomer. I'm already too late to be an industry insider. But yeah, no, I joined construction about 5 years ago, just gone 5 years. And I've had a very non-linear career, I should say. I started life as an academic. I sort of got a degree in physics, gone on to get my PhD in physics, but then decided I kind of want to see how the world works. You know, not everything is, you know, about understanding minutiae about atoms. And so I went off into management consulting, did a decade worth of work in management consulting, did a little bit of that random walk through industries and through different functions within large corporates. And saw a lot, gained a lot of experience. But then there came a point where I sort of said, look, I'd love to see something through, take a transformation through, not just do a project and then kind of move on. And then serendipity led me to Suffolk. Chance meeting led into something more. So much stuff in life comes about that way. And now I've been there 5 years.
It's such an interesting story to hear that. And my journey through construction was similar in the sense that, like, I went to school for technical communication and was at the start of my career writing documentation and manuals for medical technology. It was very dry and very boring, but you know, it was a job, and stumbled into construction by chance during the middle of the recession and stepped into this as a proposal manager. I was like, this is really neat. And I got burned out, unfortunately, because the life of an RFP and tender manager is a grueling one at times. But I was able to leverage that and pivot it into a role within technology, too. And a lot of people are making those entry points from different ways, and having those backgrounds from different perspectives, I think, is really important, which does lead into my next question. How has that helped you? Like, what are the benefits of that non-linear path that you've had as you've stepped into the world of the construction industry?
Yeah, I think where it has helped me is that it's just allowed me to bring some of the best practices and the learnings around what does it take to actually drive a data transformation at a company to this industry. And hopefully it's helpful not just to my organization, but to the industry more broadly. Because I do think there is a fairly well-known path. There aren't that many shortcuts. I mean, you always got to figure out the specifics for a given industry and a given organization. But those are some of the learnings that I've brought here. I think, knock wood, fingers crossed and all that, enough folks have appreciated that perspective. And frankly, that's one of the reasons I joined the industry. You know, I wouldn't probably have joined if I didn't think I had anything to add. But like in talking to people and in looking at the industry when I joined, I thought it was at a very interesting inflection point when it came to data. Certainly thinking now where I sit to 5 years ago when I joined, we've come a long way.
In extraction,
understanding, utilization, and you know, the journey is by no means over. But I'd like to think that, hey, played a small part in that.
And it's such a huge change too, because if you think back, and I'm thinking about my personal experience of, you get a network drive and there are 200 folders on that network drive, and each folder has a nested set of things. And whether somebody's deliberately playing gatekeeper to data or it just happens to be hard to find because they organized it poorly, it was hard to find things. And now we've got this pivot where we have access to technology that is made for the construction industry, and it allows us to think about how we want to leverage our data in a way that people weren't necessarily empowered to, because it was so manual to get in there and actually do these things that nobody had the ability to look 3 months out, 6 months out, and what they want to do. They're just reactive for their project. And it's a really tough state to be in.
Oh my God, yeah. When I first joined, like, data were all locked up in these separate systems. None of the systems talked to each other. Unique identifiers weren't really a known term. You couldn't exchange information, and it was all information that you could only capture through like typing it into a system somewhere. Hopefully it's not Excel, because frankly, Excel is still everywhere. And now you look to today, like everything's in the cloud, everyone's moving into the cloud. There's a much better understanding of data governance, data hygiene, you know, standardized processes. So amazing insights are coming out. And then a lot more passive sensing, a lot more passive data collection, new data types that people are now leveraging. Image has become, well, it's becoming, I would say, one of the sources of truth. And for our industry, that's huge, because we build physical buildings, and sometimes a picture tells 1,000 words. And that wasn't the case 5 years ago. So I think we have come a long way. It's really exciting to sit here now and see what's going to come in the future. But we're up for it.
Yeah, and I'm just excited to be here in that environment where you get to meet all these different organizations and learn a little bit about what they're bringing to that ecosystem. And now everybody's aligning against different platforms where the data transfer, even if you're adding extra technology on top of your core processes, that's okay, because they still talk to each other, they communicate. You're not stuck in this ecosystem of chaos where you've got 18 point solutions that don't play nicely together, because now you just have to do that manually. And that's tough. And it's also, as you well know, rife with mistakes. And nobody
wants to be the one
who put a 7 instead of a 3 and then, you know, cost their bid to go underwater, or your schedule slips or something terrible like that. But I think that leans into the next topic that I'd like to talk about. And it's something you share in your theater talk, and it's all around transparency. Can you give me a little bit more context about the importance of transparency in construction and how that might have changed in the last few years?
Yeah, definitely. So in my theater talk, I talked about every project's an island. And in many ways, that's true. They're like their own little mini businesses. You know, LLCs get set up on the owner side to actually run the job. You know, you have your own team, you have your own books, you have your own client. Oftentimes, you just operate geographically isolated, and you have some reporting up to corporate, but not a ton. But you know, what I talked about in my theater talk is that's a little bit of a shame, because then you're sort of limited to each individual's lived experience, which is necessarily finite. And if you don't have great data collection practices, you know, a great way to look back, extract learnings, drive continuous improvement, then all of that experience is just kind of lost. And it's doing a disservice to the young people coming into the industry right now, because who wants to just work for another 20 years before you get like this much knowledge, right? Isn't there a way to accelerate it? So I think that's what's made data transparency hard in the past. The fact that data was hard to get out of systems, but then the jobs were like geographically isolated and their own thing. I think that's changed with technology. I think now it's, you know, with the advent of platforms, you know, much easier to get your information out. There's a lot more technology becoming available. And now if you can extract, transform, structure, and then even analyze the data and serve it up in a way where folks can consume it at the point of need or to support a decision or to take an action, you know, now all of a sudden you're unleashing the power of that transparency for the sake of our people. And I think that's really exciting.
And I'm curious to hear your opinion on this too, because I'm starting to hear more contractors talk about standardization on a more organizational level instead of that project to project that you're talking about right now. And that challenge is making sure that everybody understands the expectations for how they're either entering or capturing data. And when you do set that baseline and it's similar across projects, now you can start finally looking at that organizational level in a way you might not have had the opportunity before, because you do have that apples to apples comparison. Is that starting to become more common in the ecosystem, or are we still trying to just dip our toes there?
I think it's starting to become more common, and it's a necessary and an inevitable result of that transparency. So the first thing that happens when you have transparency is then people question the data. They're like, is that right? Is that not right? Is it painting the right picture? And all of a sudden, they start paying attention. You start asking questions. You're like, hey, how did that data point come about? Like, exactly how did you measure it? What, you know, what's the transformation? What's the source? You know, when was it refreshed? All that kind of good stuff. And that then leads people to realize, hey, our processes are not the same. There is a lot of variance across. Now, I do think one needs to be careful with standardization. All the jobs are different. A lot of processes are different. Different people have different preferences. And to some extent, as long as you get to the right outcome, one shouldn't over-control, right? You need to give the job sufficient flexibility to meet the conditions on the ground. Having said that, then it does need to be a baseline, to your point. And so I think charting out where that baseline is, making sure your data hooks into that baseline so that everybody understands what it's saying and there's no misinterpretation, that's really important.
And how does that play into the culture at the company that you're working for right now as far as communicating the value and the importance of that? Like, what drove the mindset change within your org in the culture that made people understand the value of some of these things or jump in a little bit more deeply?
Yeah, another great question. I think everybody at the end of the day has to see what the bottom line is for them personally.
Absolutely.
What is the value?
Yep.
Yeah, and it can take lots of different forms. It can take the form of, hey, it saved me time because I didn't have to type up a report that I had to type up every day for the last like 2 years, right? That's value. It could be in the form of like, hey, I can now communicate with my owner in a very fact-based manner, or my trade partners, or my architect, my engineer. It's easier for me to convince them to take an action, take a decision, solve my pain point because I have the facts to back up my viewpoint. One of the most surprising things that came out actually when we gave that transparency is that we gave a lot of young professionals the ability to see the high level and to go from a macro view to a micro view relatively quickly without digging through a lot of systems and digging for the right data. And what that gave them is like, in a way, career acceleration, right? So those that can and those that learn how to read and use and manage with the data, all of a sudden they can be having a very senior conversation. You know, they can be they can come across much more polished than the years might necessarily suggest. And I think when folks see that benefit to them, they will adopt. It takes a little bit of time, takes a bit of a leap of faith to try it that first time. But once they see the value delivered back to them individually, that's when the change happens.
And I think there's an element of trust in there as well. And I think a lot of people will look at it and go, I've been burned by bad data before, where now they don't want to trust that data because they go, I'm going to report on that. I'm going to make a decision on it. And it went badly before. How is that perceptive change, or is that a big part of that ecosystem there too, as far as the trust element goes?
I think when I talk about no-fault culture in my theater talk, the implications of that too is to say, hey, trust the data because that's what you put into it, but also know when not to trust it, right? So instead of automatically jumping to a conclusion, one of the perspectives I've heard is that, hey, when I see something kind of off on the data, I never jump to a conclusion and say that it's bad. I just know to ask more questions. And I think that that's a great way to think about it. It's a decision aid. It's not a decision maker at this point in time, just given kind of where we are, and maybe it never will be. And so it's supposed to prompt curiosity. It's supposed to help you figure out where the issues might be. But then you still need to have the conversations and actually figure out if it is an issue or if it's not. So that's the first thought.
The next thought that I had tied to that would just be the predictive analytics conversation. So a lot of people hear that phrase come up and they go, oh, that's buzzwords. That's not true. Can you tell me a little bit more about like the state of that today and you know where that might come in the future and how it applies to your organization?
It's a raging debate at this point in time as to like, is it buzzwords? Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? You know, is that really what we need to spend time doing? So on and so forth. What I will say is this. I don't think it's the first thing you need to do. And it may not even be the second or the third. But I do think that if you have, you know, your processes down, you have your data right, you have really good operational control, and you're looking for that next thing, right? You sort of say, hey, I've done everything that I know to do. I take my observations, my inspections, I have my safety talks, I like have my pre-task planning, high hazard, and all of that, right? What's the next thing that I could maybe do that I could shift the dial? At that point, look at predictive, because I do think there is an order to things. There is low-hanging fruit and not to say easier, but more hygiene type things that one should do first. But if you are at that point and if you sort of feel like you're ready for like the next thing that could shift the dial, then I would encourage folks to do it. When you do it though, first thing is always how good is your data, but say your data is great. The cultural shift and the education and communication of this is critical. And we've experimented in many different ways of how to talk about it. But the easiest way, rather than try to explain all the whiz-bang math and all the rest of it, is to say, guys, look, all of us know in our gut a bunch of things that will lead to a certain outcome. Just put all of that gut feelings in, check it against the data, see what really matters and what maybe was a fluke or a coincidence. And but now you have something that actually helps you run in the background. Like, I can't always check that this factor and that factor and that factor and that factor all line up all at the same time. A machine can. So then use it as a check. And then really the art of this is to say, hey, if it flags high, just like the weather report says that it's going to rain, what do we do, right? Do we do nothing? That's always an option. Do we take some precautions, except that like it may never happen and may have been wasted action, but like, you know, still can't be too safe, so on and so forth. I think that's the real debate. And I think that's going to be what's interesting. Because I'll tell you one thing, if somebody's been watching for the past 2 years on the set of conditions that are around when a safety incident happens, they might have learned something, just like we do.
True. In the way that the technology today can do that at scale that a person just simply cannot do, I think is such an interesting element to it. And I hear people talking about a lot of the different types of technology that show up within the construction ecosystem right now. And the augmentation, I think, is the real important element there. It's not a person replacement. It's not we're not going to be irrelevant in our projects anymore. How do we help people do what they do better? And then how do we take what people don't do well at scale and allow technology to do that for them, or at least make it easy for them to do it? And when all those things come together, you're in such a good position to really scale your organization.
That's right. And I do think in this spirit of like what to do first, what to do second, sometimes I think some of the more advanced analytical methods, if applied to automation, that goes down much easier because that directly saves you minutes in the day, right? And that was actually my second thought that I've got to your previous question, which is that in order to actually get better data, we have to look at passive data capture rather than active data capture. And so whether that's, you know, automatically capturing images, whether that's like IoT devices like capturing stuff, I think that can be really powerful because we are so busy. We are so busy right now. And that's why things like automation, things like passive data capture, those things will go down much easier. But in the future, something that helps taking decisions and taking actions so that we can change outcomes, I absolutely believe it.
I would agree with you on that one. And it's a scary thought to think about a project manager out there who either doesn't trust their data or have access to it in the way they do, making choices just by their gut feel. And that gets you so far. And experience gets you a lot further along than you might expect. But to just run fully blind, especially when you have access to all of this data now, it just doesn't make sense. Yeah, you can jump in and really do these things and just leverage this technology. So like, please, contractors out there, we're impacting the built world in such an important way, in a way that impacts every person in the world. And so I'm just hopeful that we continue to adopt and scale all these technologies, you know, at the rate that we've seen in the last few years that we might not have been expecting, you know, at the beginning of 2019.
If I may, I would love to leave the audience with one story and about how data can help them all individually. You know, this is, I'm borrowing this story, it's not my own story, but one of my colleagues said that when he was a young man, and he's not a very young man at this point, but when he was a young man, he just started his career and he knew nothing. But that particular company had really great foresight and sort of manually collected a whole lot of information, estimating pricing information, so that as a young man, he just had a chutzpah to just walk into the client meeting and he could pull up all of that data and have a very knowledgeable conversation with the client and seemed wise beyond his years. And, you know, he's a very successful man right now, so clearly it's worked for him. And so I would encourage all of our audience members to say, hey, what can data do for you? Right? If we get all of these organized, served up, connected in the right way, think about what it can do for you and think about how it can accelerate your career.
And I think there's an empowerment element to it. And we hear more and more people talking about the democratization of data and access to data. All of these things are incredibly important because when you're taking down those barriers and giving people access to the data they should have, and you don't want to give everybody access to everything, there's proprietary information in the ecosystem, you're just setting everybody up in a way where they can make those choices. And like you said, you go to that client meeting and you've got the information you need and you're going to look great. I love that story. That's good. So wrapping all of this up, I know your theater talk, you had a finite amount of time to go in and present and share everything that you're excited about. What didn't you get to talk about that you'd love to share with everybody today?
Well, that is an easy one because of the sort of constraints of the duration and the format. What I really wanted to put together for the theater talk is not quite a cacophony, but like an amalgamation of operational voices around how they have felt and how they view data before and how that's changed over the time that we've been on this road. I did a little bit of that. We saw a little bit of videos and I kind of tried to mimic my COO and sort of, you know, do a little bit of a COO type of perspective on how well that came across. But that's what I really wish to do. I really wish to show the range of opinions, both positive and negative, but actually show the net movement and how data has positively impacted individuals in their career, in their understanding of the build and in their day-to-day lives, right? And so wish I could have done more of that. I think I did a little bit of it, but that's my one regret.
It's such an interesting perspective to be able to have too, because when you don't bring everybody along to some degree or listen to those voices, even if you're not setting up your data adoption strategy in a certain way, what you're really doing is making sure everybody feels heard. And when you make sure everybody feels heard, when they're making process changes, you're bringing technology to the table, the adoption process goes so much smoother because you've heard them, for one, and that should influence to some degree the choices you make with your data strategies, with your technology adoption. But also, everybody's going to be more interested and accommodating. And you've had an opportunity to express the why instead of just prescriptively coming in and going, boom, here's your new piece of technology. And even if that does make their job better and their life better, if you haven't actually explained to them or showed them why, and again, it comes back to what you shared earlier about them personally and then the company at the same time, you might not be setting yourself up for success as an organization.
That's an interesting
moment too.
Sometimes they surprise you. Sometimes they surprise you by what they take away from it. So my realization when I went through talking to a bunch of people in preparation for this talk, it's a little bit like what writers or artists say. Once you've penned a work, once you've like done a piece of art and you put it out there, what people take away from it is completely out of your control. Absolutely out of your control.
It's so true.
The most fun part about this is actually when I had to go around and talk to a bunch of people and say, hey, how did you feel? Like, think back on the first day when you saw this product. Think about the time that you've now used it and think about where you are now. How did you feel about that? What would you share? And the answers surprise you.
Is it consistent between role type as far as how people feel about it?
It's very individual.
All over the place.
I would say the practical benefits, the stuff that we design for, okay, so now you don't need to spend 2 hours a day type. Like that stuff's pretty consistent across role type or within each role. I'd say what each individual takes away from it is quite individual, right? But there are consistent themes.
And the one thing that I think about as far as construction technology goes. And I think through, or back to the CEO of PlanGrid before we were acquired by Autodesk a number of years ago. And Tracy Young was always passionate about creating technology that allowed people to go home on time at the end of the day. That was her core mantra. And I've lived it, I'm sure you've lived it, where you've got a 40-hour work week that actually is a 65-hour work week because construction's hard. And we're constrained in resources and restrained in labor, especially today. And so anything you can do that helps people get their job done on time instead of putting in hours and hours of OT, I think is a huge benefit. So,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's the last question that I had for you today. Thank you so much for joining me here on Digital Builder. And for everybody out there listening, this is Autodesk Digital Builder Podcast. We're going to be recording live all week from this spot here in the Expo Hall. Having an absolute blast. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.